Record. All right. So good morning, everyone. Thank you all so much for joining the Hyperledger Social Impact Special Interest Group's call this morning. My name is Nancy Mann. I'm one of the chairs of the Social Impact Group. I also have Alicia here with me, who's the vice chair of this, and we'll go through a quick round of introductions. But before we get started, just wanted to kick off with our Hyperledger Code of Conduct. So you'll note here that it's all are welcome. And I do encourage everyone that's here to make sure that you visit and read through our code of conduct, as well as our antitrust policy notice. And this is readily available on both our meeting agendas, as well as on the left-hand corner of our social impact page, where we have the antitrust policy notice and code of conduct. Hopefully you can see my screen right now. So I'll wait to pause just for another minute or so until 10:05, and then we'll start with a couple announcements and pass it over to our distinguished speakers today. All right, so just quickly wanted to bring up a couple major announcements for this week. One of the things is the upcoming Hyperledger Global Forum that will be held between June 8th to June 10th. So I do highly encourage folks to sign up and register. It's going to be an entirely virtual event. So, you know, don't worry about the pandemic or anything associated with that impacting your schedule. You should be able to dial in at any time point. And so one thing just to also note in terms of this event is there's going to be two sessions every single day to accommodate folks on different time zones. So that's just something to note. And I believe registration for this is just around $50 for each person. So just something to keep in mind. Another thing was we recently announced and released our social impact SIG blog post. The topic for this one, and this is actually one of a four-part series that Sean Milburn, I think you're also on the call, led on the circular economy. So this first one is the contamination, fires, and pollutions. For folks that are on the call, I do highly encourage you to read through this, and please do give us and leave us some feedback on these blog posts. You know, that definitely helps us with coming up with new content that is applicable to the community and of interest. And another thing to just note, if there are any interest in writing other blog posts that align with the social impact themes that we discuss here today, please do feel free to reach out to this group either through our mailing list or you can contact us directly through these meetings. We'd be happy to co-author, co-sponsor, you know, whatever that might be the best way to do this, but we would be happy to support more blog posts in this area. So this is definitely something that we're really interested in piloting for this year. Another thing is, you know, we recently transitioned over to the Hyperledger Social Impact new LinkedIn. It's going to be a LinkedIn company page, different from our previous group. So Alicia, thank you so much for leading this effort to this. But, you know, if you haven't already, please do follow us on LinkedIn. Just want to quickly open this up so that you guys can see this. But please do, you know, feel free to follow us. We'll be updating the group with, you know, different information about the different events that we're holding, as well as different opportunities to participate and to collaborate. Another thing just to bring up is the Hyperledger Mentorship Program. So the mentee application closes May 7th, and there's also a list of the 2021 projects. So if there are students in your network, as well as you know, other folks that are interested in collaborating or contributing, one thing to note is these are actually paid internship programs. And so, Bobby, are you on right now?
I am.
All right. Do you want to kind of, I'm going to pass it over to you because I know you wanted to talk about one of the projects in particular that you were spearheading. Did you want to share your screen?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay. I'm going to stop sharing right now. And then I think you should be able to share. And if not, let me know.
Yep, I got it. Okay, so are you seeing the Zoom or the Giving Chain?
The Giving Chain.
Oh, perfect. Okay, so where I am right now is just a link to the hyperledger.org internship page. So this is an awesome opportunity for anyone who is interested in blockchain and a student to get involved in what they're interested in. I'm going to personally pitch the Giving Chain, but let me see if I can. There's all of these great projects that are looking for students to fill in this summer to get education. Like Cactus is a hot one. I mean, just read through some of these projects and the things they're working on are incredible. My project that I'm hosting and mentoring is the Giving Chain, which is through the Hyperledger meetups in summer of 2019, right before everything hit the fan. We did a summer project where we tried to answer a social impact need in our community by answering a series of questions. And at the end of the questions, you found a need in your community that needed to be filled. And in our community, it happened to be great wealth on one side and great need on the other and no way to get the two to meet. So we created a supply chain anonymous giving chain where you can take a picture of a donation and put it on your front stoop and have that picture be the digital representation that travels through the blockchain. It alerts people to pick it up. It alerts the people who pick it up to drop it at the food bank or at other donation spots. And it can be changed for like targeted disaster relief. We saw how it could be used like when a collection of, in New Jersey, we collected our Christmas trees that the people throw them out at the curbs, but this year they collected them and brought them down to the Jersey shore to build a berm for hurricane season, which was a great idea, but how do you know where people have the trees? So the Giving Chain, again, was another great idea for that, but it needed to be built out. So that's what this internship is offering, is the opportunity to take this project and actually make it a decentralized giving chain for whoever needs it. And that would be a great thing if it actually worked, decentralized giving in a very dignifying manner. So we're working on the website for the project. It's going to be thegivingchain.com. We're going to try to see if we can get this up and running. So if you, again, to sum this all up, if you know of a student who's interested in blockchain, please send them to this Hyperledger Wiki page. All you have to do is just go to wiki.hyperledger.org and type in mentorship programs and you'll get the 2021 project list. And they're all open. Again, you have a couple weeks to research them and figure out if this is exactly what you want or if there's other projects that you think will be worthwhile. So that's my pitch. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Bobby. And Bobby, would you be interested in potentially like leaving your email address or something like that in case folks are, you know, that are on the call want to sync up with you offline?
Absolutely. No worries.
Great. Sounds good.
Thanks for letting me pitch that.
Absolutely. This is a great opportunity. All right. So without further ado, I know, so for folks that have been paying attention to our announcements the past few weeks, we've been talking about the diversity in blockchain's first annual diversity in blockchain leadership award, and the nomination period, I think, just passed this past April 1st. So we have Anna on the call. And Anna, can you actually, I'm going to pass it over to you just so you can do the full introduction. Tell us a little bit about your background, and we'd love to kind of learn more about the great work that you guys are working on.
Perfect. Thank you. And thank you for inviting me and Susan to speak. And, you know, thanks for being a partner. I know you guys have been, providing shout outs, and we are a member of Hyperledger. So my name is Anna Ashraf. Susan, my partner in crime, will join in a few minutes as well. I am a co-founder and president and treasurer of Diversity in Blockchain, which is a non-for-profit organization formed in the state of Delaware. My background is in finance. I spent many years doing capital markets and leverage finance, and did a few years doing strategy and transformation at a consumer packaged goods company, and currently serve as a global commercial lead at BlackRock within its fintech platform called Aladdin. But here we're here to talk about diversity in blockchain. So I'd love to just tell you more about the organization, what we've done, and what's coming up on the radar, just so that we can get the members of Hyperledger involved. Diversity in blockchain was incubated in MIT's legal forum in conjunction with the MIT Media Lab in the first quarter of 2018. So we've been around for a while, and we've been toying with the idea of creating an organization sometime in 2017, which came to life in the beginning of 18. The organization's main mission is to be focused on equal opportunities, open and inclusive opportunities in the blockchain industry. Our mission is to empower everyone from any walk of life to engage with the blockchain technology and to ensure equal participation. We all know, true innovation includes everyone. And so through education, discussion, and then similar things, so what you're doing here, mentorship programs, et cetera, we can build a support network as revolutionary as the blockchain itself. And that's kind of what our focus has been. With the incubation period, we sort of joined, so in that same summer of 2018, we joined United Nations in their first Blockchain for Impact Summit. And we were the official diversity partner to the United Nations during the summit. So we participated, we joined all the breakout sessions, we ensure that there's diversity and inclusion within those groups, as well as in the conversations that the teams were having. And so far, we've sort of tried to focus on practical educational opportunities as well as networking events. You know, for example, we've done sessions on smart contracts, and not really just a hypothetical analysis of what a smart contract is, but, you know, creating a forum for people to actually sit there and, you know, write a smart contract. We had a session on wallets, and in the session, we sort of walked everyone through live in the session on how to, you know, open up a wallet. So the focus really is to not rinse and repeat the same type of sort of talk that happens in these sessions, but more, you know, have them focused, you know, narrow focused, and give the practical skills and knowledge. We have an event coming up on May 19th on NFTs. Right. And people who are interested in digital, art, for example, can potentially join and learn more. I wanted to say thanks, Nancy, for highlighting our leadership awards that are coming up. I wanted to also sort of, highlight three things that I'm personally proud of that the organization has accomplished. One is we authored a white paper on the Libra project. And we were, you know, our initial review and comments regarding the Project Libra were actually submitted to Congress on June 24th of last year of the year before, per the request of Congress itself, and published and available on Congressional Record. You can go on our website, diversityinblockchain.com, and under news, you can read some of the white papers that we've authored and the Project Libra review as part of it. We also, you know, under the leadership of our executive director, Susan Joseph, we also authored a State of Diversity and Inclusion in Blockchain inaugural report. And, I'm not going to go into the details. It's a rather lengthy report, but it really provides an analysis of diversity and inclusion in the blockchain sector today, and recommends some actions and best practice standards that can be developed and adopted to enable access and voice. There are a number of things that we talk about there. We talk about, you know, corporations and organizations underrepresented from a diversity perspective. But not only that, we also talk about government. So, you know, government participation, for example, should also be evaluated with respect to diversity and inclusion. And because we were firsthand involved in the congressional hearings and in our sort of efforts in making sure we provide the right voice for the technology across all industries. We know that Congressional Blockchain Caucus that exists is bipartisan, is largely male. So, you know, things like that sort of is a focus of ours. And then the report, as you read through it at the end, talks about recommendations and for calls to action and specific best practice efforts that we recommend for corporations and organizations to take a note of or implement in order to ensure diversity. You know, things like creating unconscious bias trainings. And we've actually done some of those. We've created CLE trainings for law firms such as Sherman and Sterling and Linklaters to talk about, how to not just the fact that diversity is important. I think we all know that diversity and inclusion is important in any aspect of anything we do, but how do we encourage and promote diverse environments? So creating trainings, right, sponsorships, mentorship programs such as yours are incredibly valuable. Pipeline recruitment programs, including retaining existing workers, right, that's also incredibly valuable. We talked about measuring and reporting on diversity, and that's kind of what we tried to do with this inaugural report in 2019. And then again, you know, the simple things that shouldn't be forgotten, like fostering, you know, team level individual progress, engaging and listening and following up, ultimately are all equally important. So those are, I guess, two very important pieces of work that the organization produced in the last 2 years. And most recently, we've launched a call for nominations for the top 25 leadership award in the blockchain industry. The nominations just closed, but if you or anyone here in chat, you know, feel free to follow up with me. I'll put in my email here address as well. If you have anyone that you'd like to nominate, please feel free to do so. We hope to, you know, hold a session towards the second part of the year on recognizing the winners of the top 25. We've had an enormous amount of inbound entries, which is great. And I think it's a testament to the fact that the industry is becoming mainstream, which makes me quite happy since we've sort of been tracking and following and being part of the industry for the last 4 to 5 years. So I'll pause here. I'll open it up for questions, and I'm going to put in my email here in the chat. I'm not sure if Susan joined yet. If not, you know, I'll stay on for as long as I know I have to jump at 10:30, but she had mentioned that she's going to be able to join before I have to jump. So with that, I'll open it up to questions, Nancy, or anything else that we would want to talk about. Happy to stay on and chat with the group.
Thank you, Anna. Would it also be possible if you could share with us the white paper that you had mentioned that you had written?
Yeah, I'm going to put that up in the chats right now. So everything is, if you go on our website, a lot of the events as well as our white papers are listed there. I'm going to put a link to the two of our white papers here in Zoom. The other thing that I should probably note is that, the way we were operating in the past is we had a national organization that was essentially putting on educational events and networking opportunities. And we decided to take it broader. So similar to how you guys are operating, we wanted to go nationwide and hopefully abroad at some point. So we've created a model of chapters. So creating chapters for people to form and to lead across the US. So we've formed the chapter in New York City, which by the way is actually looking for volunteers and looking for individuals who would be interested in joining the leadership team. And if you're interested in joining the New York City chapter or interested in joining a leadership team in the New York City chapter, please feel free to email me. We formed the chapter in Philadelphia. So we have a Philly chapter that is actually quite active. We also recently formed a chapter in Houston. Our Houston chapter launched in January of this year. And we're in the process of potentially, hopefully setting up a chapter in North Carolina. So if anyone is, you know, I know you'd mentioned that you have people on the West Coast, on the East Coast. If anyone's interested in forming a chapter, feel free to reach out and, you know, we'll be happy to set up a session. We have established a form of bylaws that the chapters use. And then there's essentially a process that, you know, teams follow in order to form one, but it's relatively simple and it gives us the ability to sort of, as octopus, you know, spread our tentacles around the US and touch, you know, a lot more individuals than, you know, just two or three or four of us could potentially touch. I posted in the chats here the link to the white papers that I just talked about as well. And I see Susan just joined. So Susan, welcome. I was done with the formal part of the presentation and opened it up for questions, but why don't you go ahead and, you know, give your background. I have to drop at 10:30, but the team will stay on for Q&A.
Sure. So I quickly, my background is I'm both a lawyer and a business consultant. I've been in the blockchain space since about 2016 officially. Before that was in the fintech space and also in the tech space as an insurance general counsel. So I have had a fair amount of traditional tech and legal experience. When we started this group, it came out of a computational contracts session at MIT, where literally I didn't realize we were live streaming the group. And I said something about bringing diversity and people to the table at the outset of an industry, because then you didn't have to go fix the problems if you took them on proactively. And it crashed my LinkedIn. And that's kind of how we started, is MIT asked us to form this group and incubated us. So that's kind of my background right now. I do consulting and also legal work in this area. The diversity piece is done pro bono, but my actual day-to-day paying the mortgage money comes from doing ESG work with global mining participants and doing health data in analytics. I've stuck my hand into the NFT world. I've been in the tokenized world. I've been on the enterprise side. I've worked in the insurance world since the beginning and helped form the Global B3I Consortium. So I've been around this technology in many different facets of it, and still going strong, still find it really fascinating, particularly with the advent of central bank digital currency and how that's going to interact with all things digital. So I'll leave it there. I mean, this is a passion project for us, but it's also so important because you start to see, as things get institutionalized or as more people pour in, you can start to see the disparities in the inclusion side pretty quickly. So this is worse than fintech. Our statistics show it's much worse than fintech in terms of even having a balance. So, I will also point out that largely when we measure this, statistics are generally available for male and female. There's not so much available on ethnicity groups, even though we use census categories to track back so that you at least have a population to do some statistical analysis. Those are all optional categories, so you don't always get full information on that. So that's part of the battle that you fight, is that it's self-reporting and trying to figure out. But just in the past week, we've seen an uptick on entities within this sphere, I would call blockchain sphere, on the pure crypto side, on the quasi, more enterprise side. We've had interest in law firms in trying to support us. So that's just even in this week. So the concept of diversity is really inclusion is something that people are starting to think that they might be able to do something about, not the least of which is because we've had that going on in our political environment. So hopefully this becomes some sort of a siren call where we can move the industry to have this paradigm where they always include diversity and inclusion as some as an aspect of what they're doing, as opposed to a problem they need to fix later on. So that's me, and I'll be happy to answer any questions from anybody.
Hi, it's Bobby. I just want to say this is like such a great initiative. I'm already a member of the Princeton Diversity and Blockchain group, and I love the presentations you guys put on. They're always timely and informative. And I just think you should keep up the great work.
Thank you. We'll take suggestions too. So if you go on our website, there's a Squarespace submission, for suggestions for things. So anything that you want to suggest, we're open to that. The only qualification I have for us, I'm sure Anna told you about the Lieber report and that we went to the House and the Senate to educate. It's pretty stark when you go to the House and the Senate and all you're shown is a certain, there were no women on that committee, much less, I mean, it was a pretty homogeneous looking committee. So you got to wonder what they're advocating for or who's coming to them to advocate. We certainly didn't see diversity and inclusion on their radar. It was more of a business promotion. So, but one of the things that we don't do is political advocacy. That's not our mission. Our mission is education and networking. But under that, we are allowed to go and educate Congress. And we're happy to do so because we're the ones who have the neutral viewpoint. We're not pushing for a particular business. We're pushing for access.
That's great. I'm running a job market this summer. I'll send you a link and hopefully maybe you can do a little speaking at one of the sessions.
Sure. We're open to that. I've spoken on some UN related type things from the diversity perspective. I personally, before COVID, traveled around the world to speak on blockchain and always managed to slip in something about diversity in blockchain. But, we're happy to post through our site as well. I'm sure Anna mentioned that. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you separately, and I also cross post because I run the group Women in FinTech, which actually started out as a Women in FinTech group and a Men in FinTech group. That started out in 2014 because I said to myself, where's that group? And there was none at that point. I was involved in alternative finance, like Lending Club, Prosper type things. That group has several thousand in it. That's global. It seems like a pretty active group. When I started that, you could have extra groups. So I had a men who support women in FinTech group, and then they folded it all in one. It's still called Women in FinTech, but it has both men and women in it. We encouraged all of that. I mean, it wasn't meant to be exclusionary. And the only thing about that group is that I review who wants to join, and I don't allow everybody to admit it because you can only imagine what you get when you put women in the name of a title on the internet. So that is a protected group from that perspective.
I do have a question. We're running this again job fair, and we're offering sessions for opportunity seekers and then sessions for people who are trying to fill their pipeline. And at the end, we're holding one session for both where the employees and the employers meet. And in between, we're doing training sessions. We're doing a basic blockchain business session. And then we're doing the developers and administrator, which are very high coding courses. And you're talking about women in FinTech. What would you see as a good educational curriculum-based opportunity for women in blockchain FinTech? Like, is there any specific trainings you've come across that you think are worthwhile to introduce to the group, or would it be something that needs to be developed?
I think it's something that needs to be developed. my experience has been in this is that people sort of stay in their lane in terms of they hear blockchain and they think it's all coding. And what you're talking about is more technically oriented. They don't understand how what they're doing can fit what something else is doing. And there's a lot of hype around blockchain. There's a lot of words around it, not all of them true. And there's a lot of, you know, it's a new, relatively new industry. There's a lot of crazy in it.
Yeah, well, so, when you're doing the basic blockchain course, it does nothing. It mentions, you know, a use case for fintech, but it really doesn't. And it seems to me there's a whole vast wilderness out there of women in fintech that has no guidance.
Right. Well, there is. I would say, listen, they're probably not educated to what DeFi is or what DeFi is trying to show. And they would probably understand, you know, it's like DeFi sits there and thinks that it's inventing the wheel. What's inventing is transactions without traditional players. That doesn't mean they're inventing new kinds of transactions. It's still collateral posting and margin posting, right? It's prepayment or it's over collateralized so you don't have to worry about scrambling to get the money for settlement. So if you're looking at that, the concepts are there. These people understand the concepts. They're just being applied in a different way. And that point hasn't been made. You know, I think that there's a certain amount of, well, we're doing something brand new that's never been done before. Well, I don't think so. That's kind of like saying we're developing level two. To me, you're inventing batch processing if I wanted to oversimplify it. So it's not, I think you have to relate it, I guess is my point. This is a very jargon filled area and it scares people away.
Thank you.
Hi, Susan. Thank you so much for joining the call today. I think the work that you guys are doing in terms of promoting diversity in blockchain is really critical. And, you know, I think for a lot of folks in the community, you know, when you think of blockchain, everyone thinks that's going to be, you know, a male dominated field. But, you know, I think we're seeing more diversity, not just from female and male, but, you know, from other ethnicities, et cetera, as well. So I wanted to kind of see what your thoughts are in terms of the global landscape. You know, what are things that we can do as part of Hyperledger? And I'm sure you're aware, Hyperledger is really, really committed to increasing diversity and inclusion. Do you have any kind of pointers for us or best practices for us to kind of keep in consideration?
So I was on a call with Hyperledger last week about your upcoming event, your global event. And embedded in what you have is statistics that show the diversity of your conference. I'm going to tell you that when I went to get the statistics for conference diversity in the report, that was a lot of groundwork that we had to do. So there are things that you can do to say, hey, we are doing this. We're setting the industry standard. This is what should be. Taking a very strong view as an industry leader matters. And getting some PR about that matters. Because there's a lot of chatter about diversity. I mean, when we started this group, there was something like 20 groups that started, you know, I'm probably undercounting, you know, women who don't like blockchain bros or whatever. There was this whole mess of initiatives, take a pledge, do whatever. That doesn't get things done, in my view. It's why I wanted to go for a 501c3, because I wanted to get things done. So starting to say, hey, here's industry leaders. This is what they're doing. The rest of you need to own up to this standard. I saw a statistic this week of teens using crypto, which is your up and coming audience of, you know, at least open blockchains and certainly the gamer community who truly understands digital assets. So that is a horrible percentage of like 6 to 7% girls. So when you talk about pipeline, there has to be sort of also the same, there has to be the light at the end of the tunnel that says, not only are you going to work here, but there's others ahead of you who have, because that sort of mentorship, sponsorship feeling is really critical to fostering this kind of community. And I think that is lacking. It's something that you could do as Hyperledger, is just sort of emphasize it from that perspective.
Thank you, Susan. I'll definitely make note of that and you know, make sure we're talking about that. I don't know if you've also engaged, but we also at Hyperledger have a diversity inclusion working group. If you'd like, I'd be more than happy to introduce you to the chair there.
That's who I okay. spoke at last week. That's where they asked me, I was like, wow, you have those statistics. Why is this a sleeper? This should be up front and center, because you don't know the amount of comments that I get. They're like, it's nice you're talking about it. What's being done about it? Where's, mm-hmm. you know, what's the evidence? Because the problem or the issue or whatever, you know, it's a political issue. It's a data issue. It's a lot of issues. But if you can show that stuff's being done, it then takes away the quote, oh, it's your issue. It's not mine. It's everybody's issue.
Absolutely. And I think where awareness is key. So that's, you know, the work that you guys are doing in terms of educating the community and understanding, that's going to be really critical for this.
Any other questions? I'm happy to answer.
Hey, Susan, this is Sean Wilborn. I just had a quick question on the intellectual property side. So I'm a new attorney myself. I'm located in Florida, and sort of trying to feel out, you know, how is intellectual property going to be impacted? Or I guess how is blockchain and cryptocurrency is going to impact intellectual property, whether you're talking about copyright or, you know, trademark or patents down the line. So just sort of getting your thoughts on intellectual property protection and sort of what you've seen in your experience.
Vis-a-vis what are you talking about? NFTs? Are you talking about what data? What I mean, that's a pretty
yeah.
Broad.
No. Right. Now that's a great question. I mean, I guess we could do you could do NFTs and then data, like you just mentioned. That's perfect.
Well, it's unfinished business. Let's put it that way. You know, I don't think it's very clear how the laws are interacting with the NFTs. I mean, yes, I know the rules, but I don't think that there's a concerted effort going on for certain education to go on. I know in Clubhouse there is what do they call it? It's a very active group that Tanya Evans is involved in that talks about Black artists and NFTs. There's a concerted level of education going on for different groups to say, hey, we could have a voice here. Anybody could access this. What I see going on is some lawyers, like Professor Evans, doing education, at least a basic level of education for these folks, because you don't want to just step in. And I think that's in some ways, you know, what could an IP lawyer do? They could offer education to groups who are starting to touch this. So I've never, you know, I'm going to say over the age of majority just because it's easier. I'm an 18-year-old who is attempting my first digital asset. What do I need to look at? I'm a 40-year-old looking to revive my art market. I'm doing collectibles. What do I need to look at? And targeting sort of these are sort of entry-level things that you can do for the price of some cryptocurrency, you can get involved in this. But what really happens? What am I getting and what am I not getting? I would say the different groups don't benefit from having mainstream legal advice. So making advice available as to basic rights to these groups would be really a helpful outreach. kind of along the lines of what Professor Evans is doing, is saying, hey, do you, this group is accessing this. Let's get some basics down about the education. So I think that's, you know, from what I've seen, I've started to see some some education going out there. What I think is needed is more education, because people don't know where they're traipsing on rights or not. You saw that with the ICO world, where people just thought they could fundraise without getting the SEC's ire up. And that may be actually what happens with NFTs. You know, I'll give you an example. So I was involved with, there was a teacher in New York City, a former teacher who was teaching at the poorest school in New York City. And he started a cryptocurrency education program for his AP English group. And it evolved. So right now, Electric Coin Company sponsors it. But there were issues that he brought up in the beginning where he was telling kids that they could get involved. He's like, yeah, you all go in together and you buy a bunch of sneakers in the city and then you sell shares of that to, I was like, no, you can't do that, because that you're raising legal issues. So, you know, things that seem really simple, there needs to be some guardrails, or that people who are traditionally not accessing these markets all of a sudden access them and get really burned because they didn't have good advice. They don't have the money to pay for good advice, and they don't have general guidelines. So to me, that's an area that could benefit if there was some basic advice out there that reached these groups.
Wow, yeah, that's perfect. I'm taking some notes here, so appreciate that. No, and I think that's sort of, you know, I guess really my next step is understanding those fundamentals, and then also, you know, being able to relay, like you're mentioning, right? SEC, is there trademark issues? You know, what research has been done? And yeah, just like you said, just trying to give them a scope of what's out there, right? Because I think that what you're mentioning is that people aren't sure, and you step on a landmine, and then, you know, next thing you know, you're in litigation or whatever it may be. So,
yeah, it's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Hey, Susan, we have a question in the chat box from Elizabeth Green. When will the link to Opportunity Seeker sessions become live?
I don't know what that is.
That's me. The job market website demo I posted up on the chat, and she's referring to that. It should be live next week.
Thanks.
Gotcha. Awesome. So any more questions that we have for Susan while we have her on the call?
So, yes. Oh, go ahead.
If you put all of those contingencies into the smart contract, then and actually tell people they have to read it before they sign it, then won't that cover all of those problems with intellectual property, et cetera?
Depends on what contingencies you're putting in. You're only coding what and disclaiming, you know, what's, it depends what you put in the contract and the disclaimers, and how what you're putting in your contract is audited and matches what you intend to put out there. So you can inadvertently code a regulatory infraction. I mean, and you can say, all right, fractionalized interest, I'm going to offer them. Well, that's likely a security in many situations. So you had better be careful with that and seek advice. What I'm saying is maybe you have warning flags, because I've, you know, you can see that in the blockchain press, but that's not going to reach the markets, that more outlier markets who are just touching this, who you want to bring in, the more diverse participants. You have to say, listen, you could do this, but that doesn't, but it'll raise issues for you. So you need to get advice. You need to put those flags up there for what that the fact is that they need advice. It's not so simple. Code can't solve it, and legal disclaimers don't necessarily solve it, because you can't disclaim out suing something illegal. You know, I don't want to make it sound depressing. There's a path forward, but you're in a very mushy time where nothing's been litigated, nothing's been settled. So you're taking risks. And if you're going to advise people to take risks, that they're taking risks, you just have to advise them that they should be able to do their research in that. Just because a marketplace says that it has legally valid terms doesn't mean that they are. It just means somebody wrote some terms.
And when I'm coding, I definitely keep in mind what the laws are. And if I get it wrong, who's going to check my work before it becomes a Hyperledger product? You? Please?
Well, you know, if you hire a lawyer, so, I mean, ideally, how I would see this is if you're coding a legal agreement, is that you would have an audit that the code is doing what the agreement says and somebody's signing off on that.
Hyperledger actually had a smart contract working group that's on hiatus to kind of answer these kind of questions. If there's a renewed interest, maybe that can get revived.
You know, I mean, at some point, if you fast forward and this becomes integral into all businesses, you would imagine it would be a standard that, and I've written articles on this, so you would imagine that there would be a standard that there would be contract auditing, it would match your what you're trying to do, and somebody would sign off on it, and that just would be part of the diligence that you do. Certainly if I'm a large corporation, I would never take the risk of putting something in until I had it audited, which just goes to show you why in the marketplace today, those smart contract auditors are very hard to find and highly paid. But you can also imagine where you have big screw-ups because that doesn't happen, litigations because of it and standards evolving from that, unless you decide beforehand that you're going to sort of take the bull by the horns and say, I'm going to always hit this auditing standard and that's that. I've done my best job here. I've done my diligence. I've put my best efforts in. We're good. Somebody asked me if I could inspect activities and review smart contracts. I don't read the code. So somebody would have to sit with me with the code to say the code does what the words are supposed to do.
Thank you. That can be done.
So that would be an interesting thing to do. I can't take that on as anything full time, but I could get involved. What I think you need to come out of this is standards.
Susan, you raise a really good point. That's been an ongoing conversation about developing standards. So that we can really, you know, make sure that things are going well. So Susan, could you also, you know, would you be interested in providing like your email so that folks can, you know,
sure,
follow up with you? Yeah, for offline questions. So we have a few more minutes. Do we have any more questions for Susan before we?
So I don't know if Anna said, but, you know, we are always looking for support from diversity in blockchain. So I guess this is kind of my, not really pitch, but we are fully pro bono. So we have some underwriting and we accept all help. Let's put it that way.
So Susan, what's the best way that folks, if they're interested, can kind of contribute and, you know, join the work that you guys are doing?
The best way, so the chapters do sort of the more hands-on work. So if you're in an area that doesn't have a chapter and you want to establish one, that would be a way to sort of get the word out and get, because it also caters to your local market. On the national level, we do some programs, you know, we'll take help on all sorts of, you know, we're event-driven from that perspective. So For instance, we held an event that talked about central bank digital currencies, cryptocurrencies, and inclusion. And I know that on the enterprise side, central bank digital currencies are something that everybody is working on. So, you know, so for that kind of event, we could have used publicity. Again, we're literally bare bones. We do this as volunteers. So any sort of publicity that we can have on this, anybody wanting to do write-ups, if you have a blog that you would like to create, we can post that on our website. It's a matter of us not having enough hands to get everything done. So, but chapters are the best way, I think, to affect that. And we have a page on our global national website for the chapters to also put forward what they're doing. So the Philly, I think Anna must have mentioned, the Philly chapter is doing something on NFTs. They did something on inclusion last month and got Zoom bombed. It was pretty ugly. They had to shut it down. so there's that. As we go into hopefully non-COVID times, we have places hosting meetings for us, literally all done on a pro bono basis. And corporate donations, we certainly accept those because we have to keep the website running and our service for process and our, you know, administration fees. So that's how. And if you have ideas or programs that you would like to see, this is kind of like if you suggest it and we think it's a good idea, we'll give you the go ahead. We have somebody who suggested to us that they wanted to do a mentorship program for New York City schools to start to do a pipeline. So we said, yeah, go ahead and just keep us in the loop. I don't need to be decided, but since our name is there, keep us in the loop about how it's going. So if you come up with ideas like that and you want to do something under our auspices, it's probably best to do it under a chapter, but then we'll see how we can help. And certainly if corporations want presentations on this, we will do that. We had been doing that. We had run sessions, but then COVID, you know, so kind of shut everything down.
So that sounds great, Susan. And if possible, maybe we can come up with like a list of different ways that folks in the community can help, and we can be more than happy to pass that along to our mailing list. And then another format, you know, I think in terms of blog posts, you know, we also, you know, can look to see maybe we can do some type of joint blog posting between Hyperledger and the Diversity in Blockchain and get the name out there for the work that you guys are doing. So definitely, you know, a lot of ways that we can create some synergies amongst the organizations and hopefully get the word out that diversity in blockchain is something that, you know, needs to be, you know, really kind of at the core of everything that we do.
That sounds great. Yeah, that would be really helpful if you can do that. Certainly on our marketing materials, we can, when we have a formal arrangement, we can add you as an endorser, you know, Hyperledger. And I'm sure that we can join Hyperledger in some fashion.
That sounds great. So we'll keep in touch on that and obviously keep the community apprised on the different opportunities here. So if there's no other questions from the group, or we're going to just end a few minutes early. And Susan, I will make sure that your emails and yours and Anna's are going to be on the meeting agenda. This is also a recorded event, so I'll be sure to share this over to you in case you want to have a copy of it.
That sounds great. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you, everyone, for your interest. And thank you so much, Susan and Anna. I know she dropped off, but for coming here to talk to us about this.
Thanks for reaching out and hosting it.
Always. All right. Take care.
Thanks.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day.